Parohityaya Bhagavan Vrittakavyokila Surai Sanda Marco Suto Tasya Taicha Raja Grantike
Taicha Raja Grantike
Sri Narada Vacha. The great Saint Narada said, Purohityaya, to work as priest, Bhagavan, the most powerful, Rita, chosen, Kavya, Sukacharya, Kila, indeed, Asurai, by the demons, Sanda Amarko, Sanda and Amarka, Suto, sons, Tasya, of him, Daityaraja, of the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, Griha Antike, near the residence. Translation. The great saint Narada Muni said, and he's narrating this to Yudhisthira Maharaj, the demons, headed by Hiranyakashipu, accepted Sukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Sukracharya's two sons, Sanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakashipu's palace. Purport. The beginning of the life story of Prahlad is recounted as follows. Sukracharya became the priest of the atheists, especially Hiranyakashipu, and thus his two sons, Sanda and Amarka, resided near Hiranyakashipu's residence. Sukracharya should not have become the priest of Hiranyakashipu because Hiranyakashipu and his followers were all atheists. A brahmana should become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. The very name Sukracharya, however, indicates a person interested in obtaining benefits for his sons and descendants, regardless of how the money comes. A real Brahmin would not become a priest for atheistic men. So, a little indication here of the arrangement made by Hiranyakashipu to educate, or to try to, what we say, pollute Prahlad Maharaj's consciousness with demonic philosophy, or demonic ideology. Here we're hearing about Prabhupada's little condemns this personality named Sukracharya. We all remember Sukracharya from the pastimes of Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva, and how he was employed as a personality who is a seminal acharya. In other words, comes in the family of acharyas, but not in the line of acharyas. And Sukra also means seminal or family acharya, like that. And here, Prabhupada's point is that he is, in other words, he's a businessman. He takes up his activities in order to get some pecuniary results or some benefits in the form of something material. Position, wealth, power, material needs or whatever. He's not a real priest in the sense that he's not able to give or doesn't give what we say spiritual knowledge. We might say this is somewhat indicative of the age we live in, where people take positions not as a mood for service for the position that it offers, but in a mood to get personal gain. And this is contrary to the character of those who have developed Vedic culture. In other words, in the Vedic culture, people take positions for the benefit of others or to do a service that will benefit the state or benefit their others. In other words, it's a service. And whatever remuneration they get, of course, that's becomes automatic. But now we find that position is more like, what can I gain from gaining this position? So people look at position in terms of what is there in there for personal gain. And whether they're qualified or not, they take up the position and then try to, you know, present themselves as being qualified, but at the same time, their motivation is different. Prabhupada would also call that in relationship to people who join the Hare Krishna movement, who are not sincerely interested in spiritual life, but come for different material reasons, but come for personal gain. We can't say material reasons because Krishna allows people to come for material reasons, but people who come in order to exploit the society, they're called Kali Chela. And then Prabhupada said Tilak. Now they have Sika, neck beads, but what is their motivation? They are disciples of Kali. Kali Chela. Chela means, you know, disciple. And so what is their goal? I remember I know in many, many incidents, I'm sure Maharaj also does, of persons who have come into our society simply for personal gain. There was one such person when I was at the Chicago Temple, I won't mention any names, and his whole idea was to meet the girls and then have some sexual relationship with some girl and then move on to the next temple and try again. This was his program, really. So when I was there, we somehow found it out. What was his program? And before he did any real damage, we threw him out. And then, of course, there was other persons who were going from temple to temple simply looking for wives like that, or looking for opportunities to get some position so they could exploit the finances in the temple. So that's their motivation. So they're not really dedicated to the activities of society. They're really dedicated to their own selfish interests. So Sukaracharya may be a little bit less, what we say, evil than what I just described, because he has some Sukriti there. He has some Shakti, spiritual Shakti. But we see that this is a feature of, and Prabhupada said, the whole downfall of the Vedic culture is the downfall of the Brahminical class. And he points out that during the time of the Mughal rule in India, where Aurangzeb was somewhat powerful, he would his whole thing was that he would say, if you convert to becoming a Muslim, we give you some money. In other words, conversion was a way of attracting people by giving them some financial benefit. Even today, Prabhupada says the Christians do that. They go into some kind of area, especially in India, South India, and they preach, and they usually give material benefits, and then they offer some kind of religious activities after people come to them and are happy to get whatever they are giving. Prabhupada said, we are not like that. We're giving transcendental knowledge. We're not trying to bribe people. This is the real. So Prabhupada made this point. But then, as he describes his particular situations, the Brahminical class in India at the time of Aurangzeb were not allowing certain people to perform religious activities, although they were Hindus. They were considered to be low-class Hindus, and therefore they were not even allowed in the temples. And then anybody would see such a person, such as they would be considered low-class or even sudras by class. If a Brahmin saw that, he would have to take a bath immediately that day. If there was any notice that a sudra was coming close to his house, he would close the door. And sometimes if a sudra came into the house, they would have to wash the whole house down with cow dung. So this is this kind of arrogance, or what we say, caste conscious Brahmins, became the cause of the growth of Islam in India, because they couldn't practice their own religion because they were pushed out by the Brahmin class, and at the same time, they were being offered money to practice another tradition. So they thought, oh, well, we can't practice here, but at least we can practice something there, and we'll get some benefit from it. Prabhupada said many, he used the word many, but persons came and became what we say, converted, you could say. So that was due to this Brahmin class that they would all, of course, do the real principle, which was challenged by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and led by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was that if you're born in a Brahmin family, you're automatically a Brahmin. It's not a matter of qualification, it's a matter of birth and janma and not karma. So, and that spread and became the standard. And it didn't matter what occupation you were performing, but if you were born in a Brahmin family, and Prabhupada said you would see sometimes the rickshaw drivers, they would be driving their rickshaws and they have their Brahmin threads on. Their occupation is more like a sutra, but at the same time they claim to be Brahmins because of birth. So how does that affect us in our society? Well, the thing is, everything is based on qualifications, not on position or nepotism. Nepotism means favoritism based on family relationships. So Krishna sees what is your what is that qualification. It's not something material. It's bhakti. The qualification of a devotee is his bhakti. So whatever that is, that becomes the opportunity to offer greater and greater service to the Lord and to the society itself, and not a matter of position. And sometimes we also make the mistake of determining people's advancement simply by the position we hold in society, within the society. There's an indication that their position may indicate advancement, but it's not a principle. There's not an absolute principle. A person could be washing the pots and be more advanced than the temple president or the local, sannyasi or GBC. It's a matter of their heart. Krishna knows the heart. So therefore, what establishes a person in terms of what we say advancement is basically their devotion. Devotion is considered the advancement. Just like we saw the example of Sukadev Goswami and Vyasadev. Yeah, Vyasadev was the father of Sukadev Goswami, but when Maharaj Parikshit came down to sit at the banks of the Ganga, because he had been cursed to die in 7 days, he was fasting till death. Sages and saints came from everywhere around to see this king perform this tapasya, just to meet this great king, because he had given up everything. His family, his reputation, his position, everything. And he was just donning a loincloth and sitting, waiting to fast until the time of death. And then people came. And Vyasadev was also there. But the person that was honored as the most advanced was Sukadev Goswami, although he was younger than mostly everybody there. In fact, he was practically the youngest one there. But even his father, who's the author of the Vedas, he didn't even take the position of being the person to speak. It was Sukadev Goswami, and he was only 16 years old. But everyone understood that his spiritual acumen was way beyond everybody else, so he was the most qualified. So using this example, we can understand that it's about bhakti, it's not about position. And position, what does position allow? Position allows for greater service. Prabhupada also says that you make advancement in devotional service by how much you accept responsibility in devotional service. This is also a very important point. And I was also thinking of another statement Prabhupada made this morning when I was chanting japa. Prabhupada says, the quality of your chanting will depend on your enthusiasm in devotional service. Interesting. The more enthusiastic we are, the more we're absorbed in devotional service. Because a lot of times we talk about how to increase the quality of our chanting, and we use various types of explanations. But Prabhupada goes right to the point that those who are absorbed in devotional service, that will affect the quality of your chanting. That will increase the quality of your chanting. That will increase your desire to chant even more and more. So it's about devotion. So we see here Sukracharya. I mean, he's a powerful person. He's a very, he's performed many austerities. He's considered to be a Brahmin. But what is his concern? Material gain, like that. So he even, as Prabhupada speaks, he says he even took up being a priest for an atheist. Maharani Kashyapu was a first-class atheist. I mean, he was the best of all atheists. He even thought he could kill Vishnu. He didn't understand Vishnu's position. He understood Vishnu was there, and Vishnu had killed his brother. So he was thinking, I'm going to kill Vishnu. But now he's hiding in the hearts of all the living entities, and I can't find him. But when I get a chance, I'm going to kill Vishnu as soon as I can find him. He met Vishnu, but he didn't get his desired result was something different. So, yeah, this is... So he was a first-class atheist. And so Sukracharya, and he was ruling the world. He had such power. He was sitting on the throne of Indra. And so Sukracharya was thinking, wow, this looks like a very lucrative business here, becoming the guru of such a powerful personality. Doesn't matter if he's an atheist, as Prabhupada says here. It doesn't matter, regardless how the money comes. But he said a real Brahmanan. What is a real Brahmana? We understand Brahmana by both activities and qualities. Not just qualities and not just activities, but both. Qualities are more important. But qualities will lead to activities. So what is the activities of a Brahmana? Patan patan yajan yajan dana pratigraha. To know the scriptures and to teach others scriptural knowledge. To worship the deity and to teach others how to worship the deity, to give in charity and to accept charitable gifts. And these are the six activities of a Brahmana. So one who is actually a Brahmana is one who is performing these activities and not someone who just takes a birth in a particular family. No matter. And we meet that many times, you know, those of us who travel around, we meet people who are, you know, say, I was born in a Brahmin family, but what are you doing? I'm an IT expert, you know. Prabhupada said IT expert means, you know, technology. What did Prabhupada say technology? Sudra. He says it's sudra. Technology is sudra business like that. It's not even, you know, not even of the first three classes, it's lower. In terms of material, you know, designations, this is all material, of course. Of course, if you use whatever qualities you have in devotional service, then no matter what service you do, then it becomes daivi, it becomes transcendental. But from a material point of view, you know, people say, well, I'm Brahmin, that's material, but what are you doing? I can fix your computer. So, yeah. So the idea is that one has to act, one has to work according to the position that one is claiming to be in, so whatever it is. Just like a sannyasi has to travel and preach. A temple president has to organize and make sure to... In other words, whatever position you are, you have to serve in that position according to the description of that position. And that's given in Shastra, and it's also given by Guru. Guru can also change that and also. So position is really, the position is what position can I gain in order to achieve the best, what we say, the best opportunity to serve. Don't look for spiritual advancement. Take that out of your mind. Forget about spiritual. Think, how can I serve? Don't worry, you'll make spiritual advancement if you're thinking, how can I serve? That's the best, that's the mindset of a devotee. How best can I serve? What way can I serve my spiritual master or my spiritual master's mission? How can I serve to assist the temple president's, arrangements for making things happen? The service-minded is the actual, is the focus of a sincere devotee, thinking how to serve, or how best to serve, like that. And position may be there in order to facilitate service in a certain way. But it's not about, spiritual advancement will come when Krishna's pleased, like that. When Krishna's pleased, then automatically you make advancement in devotional service. So we try to please Krishna by our service. We try to please the devotees by our service, and by pleasing devotees, we also please Krishna. So it's not about position, it's about consciousness, and consciousness is Jivair Sarupai Krishnair Nityadas. That's my only real designation. Whatever role I play, like Bhakti Siddhanta, they would ask him, well, how many disciples, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, how many disciples do you have? He said, well, I have four. I have two arms and two legs, and they carry out my instructions. Another time he was asked the same question. He said, I have no disciples. They are all my gurus. I learn from each one of them. That's deep. Even Prabhupada said that about himself. But then he also said, anyone who says he's guru is goru. Goru means cow. So in other words, to describe yourself in the external way, in the way you serve, is not really your designation of who you are. You're only Jivair Sarupai Krishna, and that's all. We only have one designation, or one identity. But the roles we play can facilitate service in that particular way, and that's the social arrangement. And that's required, of course, for the upkeep of a balanced social arrangement within the yatra, within the temple, like that. But many times we see people are after position and not so much about the service, but it's more about the position. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Here Srila Prabhupada writes that we should only address those who are interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. Don't we go out to preach to also the atheists, to everybody? How do we preach then?
The question is, how do we preach to the atheists?
Because it seems from the purport that we are not supposed to preach to the atheists or teach the atheists. Mm-hmm. But isn't that the whole idea of preaching?
Well, we understand from Guru that there are three classes of devotee, first, second, and third class. Second class devotee is really the platform of our society. Prabhupada said we have to function on the second class. So we make that distinction. And there's four distinctions. We give our love to Krishna. We make friends with the devotees. We preach to the innocent, and we avoid the atheist non-devotees. So we may not know someone's an atheist, but when it's revealed, then don't waste your time. we preach until it becomes obvious this person is, you know, inimical or atheistic like that. Because there are so many innocent people we could use our time for who will be more receptive. Yeah. So generally that's, we try to avoid these classes of people. Sometimes we like to challenge them in order to defeat them, but Prabhupada said that's a waste of time too. Because they're never defeated, they never change. But for the sake of those who might follow those atheists, then sometimes, you know, some kind of debate sometimes comes up. I've seen some of our senior devotees do that. It's not about defeating the person. That becomes the what's happening, but it's about destroying their credibility for those who, you know, follow them. Because usually the followers are misled, that's all. Is that okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice lecture. I would like to ask, how can we build the faith in the holy name when we don't have a taste, or we know that we need to serve, we need to somehow develop our serving, but there is no taste to do it. How to move forward?
Well, taste, Prabhupada said, if there's some offenses, just like the 10 offenses. Says if you can avoid those 10 offenses, then you can get beyond the nama-parad stage and get to the nama-vasa stage. And there you get a glimpse of the glories of the holy name on that stage. So we have to very carefully avoid the 10 offenses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur sort of qualifies that. He says, by focusing on the 11th offense, which is attentive chanting, in other words, trying to chant as attentively as you can, you minimize the possibility of committing the other 10 offenses. He says, by inattentive chanting, you'll be likely to commit all of the other 10 offenses, or some of them. So work on attentive chanting, and that will reduce the effects of committing the other 10 offenses. Once we get beyond committing those 10 offenses, then our chanting reaches another stage. It's called Namabhas. It's a clearing stage. And then there is a slight glimpse of the glories of the holy name comes through, and a taste develops. And as you continue in that mood, then that taste increases, along with service, of course. You have to balance these two things, sadhana and seva.
So, but if you do offense already, Prabhupada says sometimes you just need to continue chanting or just
right.
Do. But is there something else we can do when we do offense and how to progress and just minimize the effect of that?
Offenses to the Lord or offenses to the holy name are what we say gradually eradicated through chanting of the holy name. Yeah, nam and nami. Nami is, and nam is more merciful than nami. Nami is one who's named. And the name is the name. The name is more powerful, merciful. Not more powerful, but more merciful than the person who is named. So continue the chant and try to avoid the offenses, and gradually you can overcome the effects, except for Vaishnava Aparad. Now, if you commit Vaishnava Aparad, then there's a whole process that you have to go through in order to get relief from those offenses. And that's more than just chanting the holy name. So, but if you commit offenses to the deity, like in the temple we commit offenses, or we commit offenses to the name, then we continue with the process of chanting and avoiding the activities that cause offense. But did you get that one? You sure? You have to digest before you take the next bite, you know. So make sure, because this is an important point you were saying, this is not a small thing. It's a fundamental question that you're asking. It's correlated? Okay, because it's important that you understand that point. Once you understand that, then you can move forward nicely.
I'm trying to understand this already for a long time, but somehow it doesn't go.
Well, the thing is, when you're chanting japa, you should create or be in an environment where there's absolute focus on the holy name. If you're chanting and you're not able to focus, you might say maybe the environment needs to be changed or adjusted.
I just want to correlate this one more question, please, if you can answer.
Okay.
When I see offense starting in the mind, and I'm trying to do everything the best to stop it, but what can I really do when I see the offense starting to come in the mind, starting to want to manifest?
You can pray to Krishna. Yeah, like yesterday, I was sitting right where you were sitting, and it was late in the evening, it was around 8 o'clock. Kirtan was still going on. My mind just kept wandering. And I go back to the kirtan and kept wandering. So I realized I was really tired. So I said, Krishna, I can't control my mind anymore. I'm going to take rest. So I had to do something. I was praying to Krishna. And please allow me to go. I should be staying for more of the program, but I can't. I was just too tired. So you pray to Krishna. He's there. He's right there. Just look to your left, and you'll see him. He's there to accept our sincere prayers, and also to reciprocate those prayers. You can pray to Krishna. Or you can immediately replace that thought with something devotional, something positive. But if you allow your mind if you allow yourself to dwell on the movements of the mind, then that mind will take you wherever it wants to go. And then you're following it all over the place. And you don't know where you're going to wind up. Sometimes you find yourself winding up in a place that you could never imagine you would ever get there, you know. It comes like. So, yeah, we have to learn how to, you know, watch the mind and bring the mind back to where it's supposed to be in devotional activity.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mr. Alex Zander. The great Alexander the Great.
He's a nice historian figure, but Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Nice.
It's a beautiful name, Alexander. It's got kind of like a royal sound to it. It sounds very kingly.
Yeah, my parents liked it, so probably I get it because they like me or something like this.
I hope so.
No, I have loving parents. I'm so happy for this Krishna arrangement. But my question is towards the service that we are doing. What kind of qualities should we develop with service? Because if we got puffed up with the service that we are doing, this is not good probably for our...
We should focus on the service and do it in the nicest possible way. You see what the nature of your service is. If you're working in the kitchen, then you have to be very clean and very attentive to whatever's going on. If you're cooking, that requires complete absorption into the activities of cooking. In other words, focus on what you're doing. And sometimes the mind won't allow that, but we have to force the mind to focus. So, and then try to put quality into what you're doing it in the best possible way, and also praying to Srila Prabhupada, to your spiritual master, to the Lord, to help you serve in a nice way. We can pray also like that. We should, in fact, to get their mercy so we can offer nice service. Prabhupada also makes one statement. He says, if you remember the lotus feet of the Lord, you will never be impeded in your activities of devotional service. Simply by remembering Krishna's lotus feet, you will be able to continue on nicely in your service. That's a statement, direct statement. So we have so much mercy coming from different channels. We just have to access it. If we just put all our attention on ourselves and think I can do it or I can't do it, then it'll be like that.
Thank you.
Maharaj, you want to offer something? Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you. Can you please explain a little more that point? Don't think how to progress, think how to serve. Because in my spiritual life, main force is how to progress. And I'm thinking.
Force yourself.
Yeah, because I'm thinking force to be steady. Because I think now, if I think how to serve, I can sometimes feel I have a bad day. I don't like to serve today. I'll serve after. But if I think how I can progress, that is force me to be steady. Actually, and can you explain what you think when you make that point?
Forcing.
Make progress, don't think how to make progress, think how to serve. Better to think how to serve.
Maharaj, if you want to go, if you feel like it's time to go. don't let my class keep you here. You can. It's not. I know you're trying to observe the etiquette, but you can go if you want to, if you have some other things to do. Okay. No, I don't want to keep anybody, but this, since there's questions. You know, Prabhupada also talks about, in the beginning, we have to force ourselves into the principles and into the activities. And then after a while, we develop a routine, and that becomes more natural. Our natural inclination is to act in a material way. So now we're trying to act in a spiritual way. So we may have to force ourselves to act like that. That force is just really using your intelligence in the right way. That's all it is. You're just using good intelligence. This is right, and this is what I want to do, and this is what will help me make advancement. So a little force is doing that. Prabhupada said, if you don't feel like dancing, get up and dance. And then what happens when you start dancing? You feel like dancing. When you're dancing, when you're not dancing, you don't feel like it. But when you start dancing, you feel like it. Dancing, that's one of the things that work really good. Yeah, I mean, that's a statement by Prabhupada directly. If you don't feel like dancing, dance. And then that feeling starts to manifest. Yeah. This is the process of bhakti. You're jumping into the spiritual energy by taking part in the activities. The mind is keeping us in a more of a marginal position in judging things. But as soon as we take part in the activity starts to pull us in that direction. Because it's part of anything in devotional service is of the spiritual energy. So yeah, force will be required in some situation, and especially for people who are new, it's a general thing. You have to kind of like, we don't use the word force, we have to use accepting the good intelligence that comes by way of the instructions given to us by the authorities. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? So we like that. I have to force myself sometimes, too, to do things that I know I should be doing. I think one of the things we really have to force ourselves up is when that alarm clock rings, right? And that's the real test, right? When that alarm clock rings, are we just like, we're out of bed before we can shut it off? No. Usually we think, where's that snooze button? I can't find it somewhere around here. But no, that forcing to get up in the morning is, once you're up and you're active, you know, you forgot about, you know, that you were tired. So yeah, forcing is there. Okay, so I won't force you to stay any longer. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.